This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. PRI's The World, which you hear on WFAE every afternoon at 3, has embarked on a series called The Ninth Month. The series is exploring the world of pregnancy, not just here, but around the world. Select stations around this country are piggybacking on that effort, and today it's our turn as we take a look at one of the most common occurrences in the human experience, the one that makes us possible, but one that is accompanied by a lack of understanding on the part of medical professionals and the women going through pregnancy. Our society spends a lot of time focusing on end-of-life issues and far less on birth. We know what a good death can be, but what is a good birth? You may say, well, birth is behind us, so that's why the focus is on death. But for pregnant women, the birth experience is ahead of them, and they want sometimes hard-to-find answers to their questions, and they want more control. Those desires and more were uncovered in the course of research by our guest this hour. Dr. Anne Lyerly is Associate Director of the Center for Bioethics and Associate Professor in the Departments of Social Medicine and Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where she joins us for the hour. In the modern medical world, do we tend to take birth for granted? Is it considered to be something that it's not particularly dangerous? It happens every day, all over the country, all over the world. And so you go in, you do it, and because of that, women and their questions and answers are given short shrift?
Well, I think that's part of it. I also think that, as you say, there's been a lot of discussion about what makes for a good death. And oftentimes when you look at the literature, the end-of-life literature, they look to birth as the model, that birth is good, birth is a joyous event, birth is something to be celebrated, and death should be more like that. But the fact of the matter is there are a lot of issues that come up in the context of birth, and we know a lot more about what makes for a good death than we do about what makes for a good birth. We assume a lot about what makes for a good birth, but we don't know, particularly from the standpoint of childbearing women themselves, what matters most.
How did you? I know you're a gynecologist and an obstetrician, but how did you become aware of the problem enough to launch this research project and then write the book?
Well, as you say, I'm an obstetrician gynecologist. I also have done work in bioethics, and I am the mother of five. And
whoa.
As I went through those experiences, I got increasingly concerned about a vigorous and often vitriolic debate between two sides, between medicine and midwifery. One side, the tradition I was trained in, medicine, said that a good birth is a good outcome. Healthy mom, healthy baby, we've done our job. But anybody who's been through the experience knows that that is not all there is to it. And even the most pragmatic look for something else. I looked back to my father's experience of my oldest brother's birth, which was not a good experience for him or my mother way back in the mid-1960s. And although, again, he's sort of a pragmatic engineer, he remembered that experience and mourned it, and often compared it to his and my mother's experience of my birth, which was lovely. So the other side of the birthing argument is the midwifery model. And what they say is, of course, a good outcome matters, but there is much more to it. Among those things, we need to respect birth as a monumental life event. We need to respect the woman, the baby. We need to understand the ways that they are connected, et cetera. But their view is that a good birth is a normal or a natural birth, that less is more. And it struck me that neither of those things really captured what was at issue for women. Sometimes less technology is more for women, but sometimes it's not. And I had met many women in my practice who had had illness, complicated pregnancies, where technology was helpful, sometimes even life-saving, and certainly enhanced their childbirth experience. So I felt like there was another way to think about what our goals were when we took care of women giving birth. you could see what mattered if you read a literature and poetry, but there wasn't a conception of a good birth that was based in women's views. And so I started something called the Good Birth Project.
And how would you define, from all the studies that you've done, a good birth?
Well, many people said, you know, you can't define a good birth because a good birth depends on the person. And so how are you going to define a good birth from interviewing 100 women? And what struck me from my data was more than the differences was the similarities, the ways in which women who had had very, very different kinds of births said that the same things matter. And those boiled down to five core elements of a good birth. And as you mentioned, control was something that was mentioned a lot. But the five core elements of a good birth included agency, personal security, connectedness, respect, and knowledge. And I'm happy to delve into each of those. But as I said, even women who had very different birth experiences at home in a bathtub versus triplets in an academic hospital, those things emerged for each and both of them as important.
Well, there seems to be, at least I've read that there is, a migration, an increase of out-of-hospital births. Is that being driven by pregnant women themselves who are searching for these five core things? They're searching for this good birth experience?
Well, that's a great question. And of course, when I started my research, I didn't know that these were the core elements of a good birth. But I wanted to understand why women were choosing out-of-hospital birth. Having been trained in the hospital, in modern obstetrics, it didn't really make sense to me. But people very close to me were choosing out-of-hospital birth, including one of my sister-in-laws. And so when I did the Good Birth Project, I what we call oversampled women who'd had out-of-hospital birth. So about one in three of the women I interviewed had given birth at least one time, either in a birthing center or at home. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons given for why women choose out-of-hospital birth. Some of them had to do with, you know, a push. They'd had an experience in a hospital that they didn't feel satisfied by, and they felt like they could get the things they needed at home or in a birthing center. And then there was also this pull that I think has come from the midwifery literature, has been promoted by a variety of high-profile celebrities, this notion that a good birth is a normal or a natural birth, and so the way to get that is to be as far away from a hospital as possible. Mm-hmm. Again, that's true for some people, but it's not true for everyone. Again, when I listened to women, in the end, what they were searching for, whatever their choice, was achieving some level of each of these five core elements.
Yeah, things seem to go in waves or like a pendulum swing. Years ago, nobody ever went to the hospital to have a child. They did it at home. And then slowly, I guess in the beginning of the 20th century, it migrated toward hospitals, almost exclusively toward hospitals, at least in major metropolitan areas, where everybody but the woman and the doctors and the nurses were excluded from the experience. And then we began to see husbands brought into the birthing theater, so to speak, and participating in some way. Their mere presence is participation, and then gradually helping the wife through breathing exercises during the process. And now you're talking about not only bringing it back home for a good birth experience, but skin on skin contact between the woman and her child, even as it emerges. Is this all just part of a continuum? Are we trying to find our way? Why did it go to a hospital in the first place?
Well, that's a great question, and there's been a lot of good histories of childbirth written. But, you know, birth has trends, and women are looking for things. They're looking for safety. They're looking for management of their pain. They're looking oftentimes for agency or autonomy. They want some level of control over their bodies and over the birth experience. nowadays people are really interested in knowledge. They feel like there's some essential knowledge to be gained by going through birth. So trends have evolved, women have thought they could find these things in various places. And oftentimes they do, and sometimes they don't.
I'm going to ask you a personal question. Since you've had five children and you've done this study, how did you go through the process? Did you use a hospital? Did you use a midwife? What did you do? What did you choose?
Well, sure. I mean, everybody loves to talk about their birth experience, so thank you for the invitation. And I write about it quite a bit in the book. So I have had five cesareans, and that's not a very usual thing. But my introduction to the book, I explain my initial experience with having a C-section.
Let me stop you for a second, because we have to go to a break, and we'll pick it up on the other side of that break, because I think you've had five cesareans, and there are women going, oh my gosh. Yes, we'll come back to that in a second. Dr. Ann Lyerly, Associate Director at the Center for Bioethics and an Associate Professor of Social Medicine, Obstetrics and Gynecology at UNC Chapel Hill. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Ann Lyerly is our guest. She did a study about the talking to 100 women about their birth experiences to come up with an idea of what women need, what they want, what they're missing out of the birth experience, and leading them to help find their way toward the good birth. And she's also, as a result of that study, the author of a book called A Good Birth, Finding the Positive and Profound in Your Childbirth Experiences. And we're going to take some phone calls in a few minutes. But getting back to your own five-time cesarean experience.
Yeah, well, so my first cesarean, I have very large babies, almost 10 pounds. I'm a very small person. And so it wasn't a big surprise when my baby was born that he was born by cesarean. And but in the days that followed, as delighted as I was with him, I felt badly. I felt like I'd failed. And, you know, it was something hard to deal with. And I wondered whether there were things that I had done with patients of mine who had had cesareans or whose births hadn't gone the way they'd hoped but were enrolled in medically necessary ways. And I felt like, wow, if women are feeling bad about their safe births that were done in ways that I felt were respectful and that needed to happen, what was going wrong? And I ended up needing five cesareans. I talk about the things that I learned from talking to other people and reflecting on those cesareans that could have been improved upon. For instance, in the last chapter of my book, I talk about the fact that cesarean section should not require an apology. After the birth of our first child, everyone was apologizing to me, to my husband, and as we were sitting there holding the most gorgeous thing we had ever seen in our whole lives, people were saying, instead of congratulations, I'm sorry. And I was saying, you know, what are you sorry about?
What are they sorry about?
Well, I think as a doctor, I think I'd often said the same thing. And I was projecting the idea that women were disappointed and that going through a cesarean was in many ways a loss of a kind of birth that they wanted. I was apologizing that I couldn't give her the kind of birth that she needed. But, you know, as I've said before, cesareans should not require an apology. Sometimes cesareans are necessary. Oftentimes they're life-saving. They're not always just a complication. In fact, they're a way of giving birth. Over the years, I've learned that there's actually a movement called family-centered cesareans, or I think controversially, natural cesareans, in which much more attention is paid to the experience of delivery. So instead of everybody going into surgical mode when a woman needs a cesarean, they continue to keep her involved in the process. They get her and the baby together as quickly as possible. There's some groups at Harvard and in the UK that are using a clear drape so the woman and her husband can see the baby emerge from their body. And I will tell you, my last delivery was a lovely one. As my daughter was pulled out of my body, she was placed directly on my chest before I was even sewn up, which might give some people pause, but it was a big relief to me because in the past, I'd had a baby who was whisked away to the neonatal intensive care unit. Mm-hmm. And so what had happened was that my obstetrician had listened to me. She had understood what I had needed. And what I had needed most of all in that birth was to connect with my daughter and as quickly and completely as possible. That's not what everybody needs, but that's what I needed. And so that cesarean was a lovely finale to my childbearing experience.
Yeah, your five-time experience with cesarean seems to me to be the I don't know how to say this, actually, because you talk about the that medical professionals are most concerned with the outcome, delivering the baby, healthy baby is the goal and a healthy mother in the process, while midwives believe that natural childbirth is the only way to go. You say that both arguments are lacking, and it seems to me that if you need a cesarean and the outcome results in a healthy baby and mother, isn't that a good birth? Doesn't that give the out to the doctor's point of view that the outcome ought to be concerned for the health of the baby and the mother?
Well, in some ways that's true, but not to the exclusion of the experience of mm-hmm. the woman and her partner. So what I heard time and again was people's experience of cesarean that was disrespectful, did not feel sacred in the ways that vaginal birth did to them. And there wasn't any particular reason that respect had to go out the window. There wasn't even any reason that women's autonomy had to go out the window when she needed a surgical intervention, but oftentimes it did. So the point really is that in natural birth, many of the things that people associated with a good birth come easily, right? They're part of the midwifery view of what matters in birth. In the medical model, they don't come quite as easily, but they're absolutely there for the they can happen, you know. Respectful, lovely birth can happen when technology is needed or desired. One of the key examples of this I often raise is this notion of being in the moment or being present. And so many women will say, well, I wanted to have a birth without any drugs, because I wanted to be in the moment with my baby. I wanted to be able to bear witness to this very special experience in my life. But the fact of the matter is, sometimes people get epidurals that allow them to bear witness in that very same way. Women who have cesareans, oftentimes we don't put them to sleep. We allow them to stay awake and bear witness to their birth, even though it's a different kind of birth than the low intervention birth that we've normally associated with this notion of presence. So my goal was really to reinforce the fact that just because a doctor has delivered or doctors attended a delivery in which the woman and the baby have emerged healthy, they haven't done the whole of their job. People remember their childbirth experiences. They remember what things are said to them, and they remember the ways in which they were traumatized that have no physical scars associated with them.
I want to come back to the issue of control in a few minutes, but I also want to take some phone calls because there are people out there who I really think would like to talk to somebody who's done all the research that you have done and share their thoughts and questions. And Emanuela in Charlotte has had some birthing difficulties in the past. Emanuela, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. For me, I would have loved myself to have a natural birth. I could not, and neither could my mother. My mother was progressing, and they rushed her to the ER. It turns out I was stuck so badly that I was actually paralyzed for 2 days on one side. My son was the same thing. he was stuck. They had to pull him out. And what turned out is both my mother and I have a very rare condition where our pelvis is not shaped normally, so neither of us can have a baby naturally. And without medical intervention, I certainly wouldn't be here, nor would my son. So I too went through, oh, I'm a horrible mother, I couldn't have a natural birth, but I have a happy, healthy four-year-old, and I couldn't ask for better. So,
well, that was going to be one of my questions, because in the reading that I did about your experiment or your study, Dr. Lyerly, is that many women come away from this so-called unnatural birth experience feeling guilty about this. There should be no guilt associated with it, correct?
Well, I think that's true, but I think that there is a lot of guilt associated with it. And I have a view about where that comes from, at least in part. And there's a very prominent view that says that women's bodies were made for birthing, women's bodies work. For some women, that's very helpful. It gives them the confidence they need to power through the pain and have a low intervention birth that they want. But for other women, people like Emanuela, people who maybe have a medical condition that precludes them from being able to give birth vaginally, women whose babies maybe have a condition that requires cesarean or assisted birth, it leads them to the view that there is something wrong with them. If bodies are made for birthing, what's wrong with my body? What's wrong with me? And I have seen this guilt emerge very powerful in many women, and it comes from what was supposed to be an empowering mantra. And instead, I think it has wreaked havoc on the hearts and minds of childbearing women across America.
So what would you tell those women? How do they overcome these deep-seated feelings of guilt?
Well, first of all, I need to name the mantra, because it came from somebody. It came from a midwifery community that views things that way but would like there to be more low-intervention births, mm-hmm. in part because they believe in them. They believe that they're empowering and lovely, but in part because that's what midwives tend to do. But also, my book involves stories, beautiful stories from numerous women. Many of them have had many babies, and over time, women start to pull away from this notion of a good birth being a normal birth, or a good birth being a natural birth, or a good birth being just a healthy mom and a baby, and they find the things in their birth that they value, and they treasure them. And that might be a first moment with their child that wasn't exactly the textbook first moment that they read about in the birthing literature, but nevertheless, it's their own and it's one that they love and they treasure. Or maybe it was their feelings of agency and power when they pushed their baby out with an epidural. Hmm. That the epidural allowed them to cut back a little bit on the pain, to rest enough so that they could deliver vaginally. Or maybe it was how brave they were in the face of needing an emergency cesarean.
Which leads me to Martha's question, Martha and Charlotte, who talks about fear. Martha, welcome.
Thank you. This is something that I think is really important in helping, especially first-time mothers. I had three children, and I never had an epidural, but I did go to the hospital, and I am 6 feet tall, so I had lots of things in my favor in doing that. And one of the things that I did was to work on not being afraid and knowing what the pain was doing, and that helped me a lot. And I think a lot of women go into the birth experience just terrified of that pain. And I wonder if you talk about that in your book and what you would say to a young woman in getting ready for that pain.
Well, I think it's important, and I've heard this time and again, that people understand that childbirth does tend to hurt. There was a movement a couple decades ago that wanted people to understand, I mean, wanted people to believe that childbirth wasn't that painful. And there was a famous midwife who called contractions rushes instead of contractions. Hmm. And what I heard from a lot of women was that they were surprised by the way childbirth felt. And being surprised by it was worse than being prepared for it. So once women had been through birth, even if they'd been through a really hard birth, they knew what to expect and they could recognize what was happening and see it as potentially productive or normal. So I think, you know, listening to other women, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear childbirth horror stories, and I don't have horror stories in my book, but I have reality in my book. And if you listen to women and what they've really experienced and what it meant to them, and women who've given birth more than once, in my book I call them wise women, because they have ways of describing them, and they don't have an agenda oftentimes. They just wanted to share what they learned from going through birth, and I think it's really helpful to listen to these stories when you're moving towards your own birth.
Martha, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Let me go to Crystal, who identifies herself as a physician. Good morning, Crystal.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show, Mike, by the way.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say I'm a naturopathic physician, and I also did a home birth with my own son, who's now almost 11. And for me, that was the right decision. It was something that I felt strongly about, that I did not really want any kind of medical interventions unless it was absolutely necessary. I did, however, live very close to University Hospital at the time, and my midwives were perfectly willing to drive me to the hospital, you know, if they felt that it was necessary. Luckily, everything went well. It was a very long birth. It was 46 hours of labor. And, you know, I just wanted to comment about the thing that you said about the rushes, because I also read that book. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think I was a bit unprepared for how painful it was. I kind of jokingly describe it now as trying to get a basketball through your nose. So it's definitely painful. But I encourage my patients, you know, I say to them, you know, that was the right choice for me. It may not be the right choice for you, but I want you to fully explore all of the choices, and I really encourage them to have a birth plan. And I think that's very important, because the aspects of respect and control, I think, are very, very important. So I'm glad that you're having this conversation, because that, for me, was very important, was having control of the situation and having a respectful birth, which respected my choices as
well. All right. Well, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. So she talked about having a birthing plan, a birth plan. Do you go into that at all, Dr. Lyerly?
I do go into that. And I am a little dubious about birth plans, to be honest. I think it's good to think about your birth. But one of the things that's really important to understand is, as much as we want control in the context of birth, women want control, doctors want control, even midwives want control. It's important to everybody. Birth is not really something that we can control, for the most part. It's not in our control. And also many people acknowledge that you shouldn't really control it. But I think this notion that you write out a detailed birth plan with what music you want playing and what ball you want to sit on and what side of your bed you want your partner to be on, gives women a false sense of what they can control in their birth. And then again, when those things don't happen, they feel disappointed.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's better to just think forward about generally what your hopes are for your birth, and communicate them well with your provider rather than making a detailed plan.
So make some kind of, have some expectations, but be willing to go with the flow. I want to come back and talk about control more extensively with Dr. Ann Lyerly. We'll do that in just a couple of seconds. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today, Dr. Ann Lyerly from UNC Chapel Hill, has conducted a study with women talking about their birth experiences and what they wanted, what they received out of the birth experience, what their excitements and joys were, what their disappointments were. And she put all this in a book, A Good Birth, Finding the Positive and Profound in Your Childbirth Experiences. And it doesn't have to be natural childbirth. It can be by cesarean, it can be with an epidural, etc. And you shouldn't feel guilty about that. But one of the things that emerged in your study is that almost half the women expressed the desire for more control over the experience. And I'm assuming that it's not just the actual hours surrounding the birth. I would think it also includes the 9 months leading up to that, correct?
Sure. I mean, actually, it's interesting that you should ask that way, because when we asked women to define the birth experience, people felt like the birth experience stretched out far beyond what probably people on who are listening to this are imagining. So some people said it started when they got to the hospital, but some people thought the birth experience started in the middle of pregnancy or when they got pregnant or even when they thought about getting pregnant. So birth is spans much longer than that ninth month that you're talking about today. But indeed, control was one of the really big themes that emerged when we talked to women, again, across birthing experiences. Half the people said it was important, and then when we pressed everyone on it, another quarter of them said it was critical to a good birth. But one of the things that we found was that when people used the term control, they often meant different things. Sometimes control meant feeling connected to your baby, to your partner, to your loved ones. And that ended up being an element, connectedness ended up being an element of a good birth.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes control meant, in probably the definition that would come to mind first, this notion of being in control of the situation, being an agent of the birth, getting to say what happened and when, not having things done to you that you didn't want to have done to you. But control also linked with many of the other elements of a good birth. Feeling knowledgeable linked up with people's notions of control. So women across the board said that control was very important.
And respect is one of the key elements here, too. And I'm curious why a woman would feel disrespected, or that she why would she feel that her baby was not respected in the process? What kind of activity or behaviors are going on that would cause that to happen?
Well, it's really unfortunate when it does, and it does all too often happen that women don't feel like they're respected. So I broke respect into three pieces. One was respect for the process of birth, one was respect for the woman, and one was respect for the baby. So one of the things that happens when you go into a hospital is people start thinking about birth as a mere medical event,
mm-hmm.
right? And we know that birth is more. We know that it is an event with bodily and existential meaning. It's a family event. But it happens in the same kind of room that people who are getting an appendectomy stay in, that people who are having their leg fixed stay in. So sometimes respect for birth can get lost. Doctors can be quick. I tell the story of one physician, one of my patients who told the story of her doctor who said to her, come on, hurry up and push out your baby so I can go home and read to my kid.
Mm.
And, you know, harrowing sort of thing to hear, never forgettable thing to hear. And, you know, you would never say that in the context of somebody dying, right? Which is another sacred event in many ways.
Right.
But people can be flip when it comes to birth. And so
is it because they feel that the ultimate outcome is going to be positive, so I can make a joke here, or I can take this lightly because ultimately you're going to be overjoyed with the end of the process?
Maybe. I mean, I think I didn't interview as many practitioners mm-hmm. as women. I think sometimes that's why. I think sometimes it's because everybody's a little bit scared.
Yeah.
And you know, if we lighten a situation, then we can press our fears aside. And your caller had talked about this notion of fear in childbirth and that we should press fear aside and women will be able to approach birth with more confidence. But you can't totally get rid of it. I mean, I think one of the reasons that the midwifery community emphasizes so much that birth is normal and natural and safe is because they want to believe that. They need to believe that to practice midwifery the way that they do. Those of us in medicine, we worry more about the very unlikely bad things, and we think we can control those with our technologies. Sometimes we can, but not always.
So you're saying that neither side has the complete answer to this. Neither side has the completely correct approach.
Well, I would say, you know, you can't dispense entirely with this notion that birth is somewhat out of our control. And so you have to give into it rather than trying to extinguish all fear. And, you know, one way that we can deal with our uncertainties of birth is to is to face them. And another is to hold on to the things that bring us joy, feelings of safety, feelings of being respected, feelings of empowerment and knowledge, to balance them out.
I want to get back to something you talked about a second ago, and that's control during the process, that some women have expressed anger, resentment, whatever, over things being done to them during the process of birth that they didn't authorize ahead of time and that they don't want necessarily to be done, either by a physician or by a midwife. Is a person going through the process of childbirth, perhaps under the influence of pharmaceuticals to lessen the pain, in a good position, really, to determine what the right thing to do at any given moment is? Even though they've talked about it ahead of time with their doctor, maybe the doctor sees something that you can't see and certainly has a clearer head in the process than you do, and they feel that they have to do something here that you didn't talk about or that you said, I don't want that done.
Well, you know, I think that there is a view that women are who are laboring are less autonomous, if you will, than other people. But this doesn't come up as nearly as often in other areas of medicine where people are under stress or in a lot of pain. My husband is a cancer doctor, and rarely does he question the autonomy of his adult patients who are going through a lot. I think that this view has a really dark side, too, which is that to the extent that people question women's ability to make good decisions in labor, sometimes they have forced things on them that they want, that they don't want. They've even used the force of law to get them to do to accept interventions that they feel are necessary. And I think it's a very unfortunate situation. The law, for the most part, has said that this is not okay, that women are autonomous people even when they're pregnant and laboring. But this received view still gets a lot of pushback from my colleagues in particular.
Let me take a phone call on a topic we have not addressed yet that you do, in fact, address. And this is from Eliza in Charlotte. Welcome to the program, Eliza.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Mike, for addressing this topic. I did want to mention one thing that just came up recently. The doctors mentioned how midwives, which I used midwives in my hospital birth, which was intervention-free. As you know, home birth is illegal in North Carolina. I don't know if we've mentioned that here yet. But one thing that seems to happen is that midwives are painted as having more of a focus on the experience instead of the outcome. Like, everyone wants to feel really good during the birth and have it be quote-unquote natural. But my belief is, from the midwives that I know and I talk to, that the emphasis on remaining positive and believing it's safe also ultimately affects the outcome. And one thing that hasn't come up is that the U.S. has some of the poorest outcomes in terms of maternal morbidity and mortality across the world. We're far behind less developed nations. We actually ranked 39th on the list of maternal mortality. And this actually affects racial minorities in a very unique way. African American women have four times the risk of dying from simple, preventable complications from oftentimes cesarean C-sections or other interventions. And usually the risk isn't just from one cesarean, but multiple cesareans, which is, interestingly enough, what your doctor has personally experienced. So I just wondered, you know, you're emphasizing respect so much. I would like it to be mentioned that a lot of times women aren't choosing a home birth or an intervention-free birth out of a desire for more presence or more experience, although I think that's there. I think it is out of fear.
Because okay.
We're right. Scared of what the complications of interventions can be.
All right. Doctor?
Well, Eliza, I think you make a good point. And one of the things that surprised me about the interviews that I did was that when I talked to women who'd had out-of-hospital births, either in a freestanding birthing center at home, one of the reasons that they chose that venue was that they felt like it was the safest place to give birth. So as a doctor, I was very aware of the very rare catastrophe that could happen in a hospital. So out-of-hospital births didn't strike me as safe based on my training, you know, based on what I'd been exposed to. But the fact of the matter is that there are other things that happen more often in hospitals, like cesareans, like episiotomies, like epidurals that somebody may not want. And so out-of-hospital birth is a way to be as far away from hospital error and potentially harmful technologies as possible. And I think it depends on vantage point. So some people feel safe when technology is right there, and I'm one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't attend a delivery out of hospital. I wouldn't attend a out of hospital birth because I don't think I would know how to keep my patient safe. On the other hand, there are other people that think technology is the threat, and so giving birth outside of a hospital is the safest place for them. I do want to say, in bringing up the issue of respect, one of the problems with care in the United States is the relationship between midwives and doctors. And in my book, I call this the birth wars. There is a lot of criticism from one side together rather than working together. So if you're going to have an out-of-hospital birth, you have about a 1 in 6 chance of being transferred to the hospital if you are in the right risk category and you're being taken care of by a knowledgeable, responsible out-of-hospital birth caregiver. Having a good relationship between a midwife who is taking care of you outside of the hospital and a doctor who's working inside the hospital, in my viewpoint, is critical to safe care, and it's also critical to experience.
So if you prefer to do it with a midwife, if you prefer to do it, and in North Carolina that's not allowed, you have to go to South Carolina to do that, do you need to find an obstetrician who is on board with this process, who will come to your rescue, who will be available to consult with the midwife, et cetera, somebody who acknowledges that this is a valid way to do this and it's not threatening to them as a medical person?
Well, I mean, this is out-of-hospital birth is not illegal in North Carolina. I have been on the board of the Women's Birth and Wellness Center, which is a freestanding birth center in Chapel Hill. They are bursting at the seams. They are staffed by a number of midwives, and they have a relationship with UNC Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So that if they need to transfer somebody to the hospital, and like I said, that happens in about 1 in 6 births, they have somebody to call, and they have somebody that they have a relationship with, and it's not that big of a deal. And they labor, their patients labor on the first floor, because if they need to get to the hospital, they don't want them to have to walk down the stairs. They're not in denial about the possibility that that's going to happen. Mm. There are also home birth midwives practicing in North Carolina, and in cases where transfer is required, they tend not to have a relationship with the hospital. So it can be a more problematic experience. Some of the women that I interviewed in North Carolina, but also elsewhere, had bad experiences either with EMTs or with doctors once they got to the hospital, who felt like nobody asked if this was you know, okay with me, and now I'm having to deal with a complicated pregnancy. And not that I think that's the right response to it, but that is a prevalent response. So in other places, like in Europe, midwives are expected. Out-of-hospital birth is not taboo, and relationships between midwives and doctors who can do higher-tech deliveries are better. And I think that's the key to better outcomes.
I have 15 seconds, and Will on Facebook wants to know how a father, how a father's role in the birthing experience can make the process a good birth. What should men do that they're not doing now? I have 15 seconds.
Well, I've been waiting for that question. Men are critical to the birthing experience. My husband was. My dad was an important part of my mom's birth. I think they need to listen to their partners and ask them what they need. That's the most important thing they can do.
Dr. Ann Lyerly, Associate Director of the Center for Bioethics and Associate Professor in the Department of Social Medicine, Obstetrics and Gynecology at UNC Chapel Hill, and author of A Good Birth, Finding the Positive and Profound in Your Childbirth Experiences. Thanks for the hour.